Welcome back to Cambro Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today is episode 239 of the podcast. And it is a solo Q&A, as is tradition. Every 10 episodes and one's ending in 9, I answer questions from you guys on Instagram and from my email list. And today I have around 28 to get through. And I'm out here recording in my Airbnb in Dubai. I've got a bit of a makeshift setup, but I'm hoping the audio quality is as good as possible. And the questions this time around are really interesting. And you're going to hear, amongst many other things, my thoughts on fake friends and building the right circle, hidden untold drivers that keep me going, the essence of happiness, my childhood career aspirations, and much, much more. Today's podcast is sponsored and supported by Vibe. Vibe is an international nutrition company at the very cutting edge of unlocking peak performance for both your brain and your body. There's a wide range of products to choose from and really support your needs depending on what you're interested in. And that can be your nutrition from a meal shape perspective, the greens powder, the lion's mane mushroom nootropic, and the new and pretty exciting from my perspective, brain care coffee alternative. Some of the most replied to Instagram stories that I've ever posted have been when I share the lion's mane mushroom, and I use it primarily as a cognitive enhancer for my focus, my productivity, and just making sure that I'm getting the best out of my deep work sessions. And I can say with certainty at this point now that I feel great and fully dialed in when I'm using it daily. Building the podcast alongside progressing my corporate sales career is very stretching on my time, but I quite simply won't sacrifice my nutrition and my health on the altar of me succeeding, because ultimately I really believe that health is wealth, and Vibe's green powder is another big part of that puzzle for me. I'm not eating enough fruit and veg, and I bet you listening are not listening, or sorry, are not doing the same either. We really are. We're too busy sometimes to cook and get the full benefits of those things. And Vibe's green powder provides me with all the benefits I need from a nutrient perspective and covers those bases at an affordable cost compared to some of the perhaps the more famous brands in that market. To help you unlock your peak performance for your brain and your body too, you can shop at vibe.co.uk, which will be linked in the show notes, and get 15% off with the code CAMPOD. That's CAMPOD. But before this introduction finishes, I want to make sure that you have subscribed or followed whatever platform you're listening on. We've seen some really, really cool growth, and I have an incredible lineup of guests coming. I've recorded out here in Dubai with Zubi. Oliver Anwar has returned to the podcast. I've just recorded with Rob Henderson about his new book, Troubled. And I have booked in for Dr. Meg J to return to the podcast. And excitingly enough, Rory Sutherland is booked in for April. And if anyone is interested in the podcast space, I'm sure you have heard Rory speak before. But the music's about to play, and you've got an interesting conversation with me answering your questions. Let's go. Okay, then we are back with a solo podcast, and I am recording with my makeshift setup here in my apartment in JBR in Dubai for the break that I'm on here. And I've got some incredible episodes that I've recorded, but I knew that I couldn't let you guys down and not produce my solo, which I do every 10 episodes. And we've got a whole host of questions to get into, and let's not dilly-dally, let's get straight into it. Question number one, you've had some big guests on, but how did you manage to get Daniel Priestley on? I feel at this stage, coming up for 4 years of the podcast, I've really refined my outreach approach, and a lot of what I do comes from the sales background I've got, and that includes cold emails, messages, but also using networking, introductions, referrals as a means of getting to someone who you might not immediately have obvious access to, or who you might get lost in their inbox. And Daniel was a combination of these. I hosted Rebecca Hollis on the podcast back in 2021, and Rebecca happens to work at ScoreApp, which is one of Daniel's businesses. Before going to Dubai in December, I saw on Daniel's socials that he was going to be in Dubai for a speaking event. So I messaged Rebecca on WhatsApp, basically saying, I know that Daniel's going to be inundated with invites, but I'm going to be in Dubai at the same time. I'm going to have a great studio set up. I can promise I'm going to ask him for some great questions. I'm not going to ask you for a direct introduction, but as a helper, can you let me know what is your advice on how to best get in touch with him and to get him to notice me getting in touch? So Rebecca and I agreed. She let me know what dates Daniel was going to be in Dubai exactly, and there was actually a good overlap. So I had my hook and my message, and I basically sent a message to Daniel titled "See you in Dubai?" question mark across LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. And quite quickly, I got a reply from Rebecca to say that she'd seen it, because I'd mentioned Rebecca's name in the message. And I then worked with Daniel's PA who is an absolute powerhouse, so organized, to confirm what was going to be best in terms of booking that in. So I think that was a big factor. The fact that I had a backlog of contacts from the podcast over the years, that's a big, big help when it comes to my outreach. And being over 120 odd episodes in whenever I invited him is huge. And making sure you've got a good relationship with my previous guests has enabled me to get introductions or advice or support where possible. And at this stage, the show is credible, and Daniel could click on the link to Spotify and Apple Podcasts that I sent him and just assess and see the volume and quality of previous episodes. So that was a big factor in getting somebody like Daniel, and I'm sure many of the other big guests that I've got coming too. Question number two, what are three non-negotiables in your life for you and your circle? I've asked a similar style of question to this to guests when I'm asking them about who they spend time around and what that means to them. And I think it's particularly interesting to ask people about this who have grown a lot and seen changes in their circumstances, their status, and their environment, because there's a big risk as you grow that you become surrounded by people who maybe aren't really friends or genuine, and instead they're there because of your success and what they might get access because of that. And I'm not somebody that's in that exact position, but I do know that I have to be more selective of the people I spend time with than at any other time in my life, because there's more things for me to say no to than ever before, and I need to be hyper selective. And there's more people that could potentially stand to gain from getting access to myself or my network. And that is something that I would always be very careful about. So when thinking about this, I would say, first things first, all of my friends that are really close to me have some form of exercise habit. And as a trait, it's a foundation. It's something that people I spend time with, they have respect for their health. For a number of my friends, that's a very serious relationship with health and fitness, and it's very, very focused. Well, for others, it's not the be all and the end all, but they do train or exercise in some capacity. And many of my catch-ups and times when I'm getting to fit people into my diary and I'm fitting into their diary are gym sessions or something health-related, like a long walk or a sauna. So that's always very important. Secondly, in terms of non-negotiables for my circle, they are people that encourage and support my success. They're never going to try and one-up me or belittle me, but instead they're going to push me in the right direction, and they're actually happy when I win. They are genuinely pleased to see me do well, because you'll notice this. You might have people in your circle who don't cheer when you win, and they almost try and take the victory away from you. You don't want envious or jealous people in your circle. Your friends should be supportive and move you forward in the right direction without any form of feeling threatened by your success. Leave the miserable, down-regulating, mood hoover people away from you. And those who your success makes feel uncomfortable, they're going to languish in the background. Just leave them to be with other losers. If somebody constantly tries to make you feel guilty for a win that you're wanting to celebrate or something you want to work towards, they're not the right kind of person for you to have around. And if somebody always tries to one-up you when you share good news or success in terms of trying to compare it back to their own, that's also somebody you don't want to be around either. Lastly, in terms of my closest friends, I would say they share the same values as me on the major topics in life. There's no major friction about particular values or principles when it comes to the really, really important things. My wider circle, there's certainly some deference, but the big issues on life decisions and principles, my friends, they broadly share that. And I often hear people talk about polarity and how that's healthy, like to have some yin and yang. And I agree that it's healthy on some matters, like somebody could be very spontaneous, whereas I can be quite organized and focused on planning, and that can happen and that can work. But if you have divergence on what you think about really core topics like family, health, freedom, choice, manners, or really foundational other principles, we're not going to be very close, and you're not going to be in my inner circle. Question number three, what's one thing somebody told you that you cannot unhear? What can I not unhear? I think from and this is recency bias, because that tends to be the case when I record these solos. I look back on the last 10 episodes more than I look back on my entire time recording. Alex in Books, who was on a couple of episodes ago, he had a number of really great phrases that related to reading, learning, and retention. And the most actionable of them that really stuck with me is, read just in time, not just in case. And this actually explains why my reading habit has been much stronger at different times in my life. For example, I read Rob Henderson's memoir, Troubled, in about 5 nights. I could hardly put it down. Now, of course, it was a good book and it was interesting and it was speaking to me about topics I was interested in at this moment in time as well. But there was also a time pressure for me to prepare for interviewing Rob. And when you combine the fact that I was genuinely interested in the subject matter on social class and the family unit in society, and that I knew this interview was coming up and I need to be prepared for it, I read it in time for what mattered to me. And I was more willing to read it and make time for me reading, because everyone knows in a busy diary, it's hard to do that. In contrast, if somebody, a friend or a family member or work colleague, recommends a book to you and a topic that it's not as important to you as it is to them, you're not going to spend as much time invested in that as they were. And Alex gave lots of examples about this, including he's recently become a lot more interested in copywriting and sales because he's launching an online product. And as someone that is trying to maximize their success in that space, he was much more interested in reading those books. In contrast, when he was in his early career, he was reading lots of stuff on like management and structure, and that wasn't relevant to him. Whereas you might be listening to this and you might have just been promoted in your work and you've got a team that you need to manage and get the best from. Well, guess what? Reading management books is going to be far more valuable to you. So I really cannot unsee this in my life. It's really, really relevant, because even if I expand it out, a solo episode is maybe not the best example of this, because I cover quite a wide range. We've got like 28 different questions today. But you will look at my archive on the podcast and you will pick something that's based on your interest, either in the guest that I'm hosting or the subject that we're talking about, rather than just picking something that somebody recommends to you that doesn't speak to you in the same way. So you're much less likely to listen to a topic that's just in case you enjoy it. Instead, you're going to listen to something that's at that time, at that moment, it's valuable to you and it's going to mean something to you, and you're going to listen to it more as a matter of urgency. Question number four, what are some marginal gains that could be made to the show? We've actually managed a higher frequency of upload of around 2 per week for most of 2024 so far, which has been really, really pleasing. And that takes a lot of effort, and that will actually continue during April based on the number of episodes I've got stored up and the number of interviews that I've got booked. But beyond that, and this is definitely something I'm thinking about as I sit here today, I could make some improvements to the home recording setup. I think the audio, particularly when I record in my own flat, is excellent. Today, I think it's good, but only good enough. But visually, I know I could make some significant improvements to that. And I've just looking at the camera just now, it looks okay, but it's not the most aesthetic thing. And really, the most value in terms of me competing with the rest of the podcasting market is coming from what I'm saying and what I'm talking about, rather than how visually it looks on YouTube. Probably less marginal than that, those gains, is something a little bit bigger. And that's actually something that's going to require more resource and also more time allocations. And it would be to do more trips to set locations to record with guests. Dubai has been fantastic. I've really enjoyed myself out here. And that's twice in a matter of months that I've been here. Something that stands out to me is probably London and probably Marbella, in terms of a bit of an epicenter for really aspirational people who would make good guests for my show. So those would be some of the gains that I think we can make. Question number five, what's the hidden untold drive in you that propels you to achieve that nobody else knows about? If I look at how I'm wired and the things that I rely upon to do the really hard work when maybe other people wouldn't, or it kind of feels like a bit alien, I've really built an identity and a self-image of myself as somebody who does the work that they said they were going to do, who turns up as the man that they said they would be. And when that's the case, you have to show up and follow through, because to reinforce that identity of that version of myself that I say I am and the vision that I have myself over and over and over again, you need to be consistent in your action. And I think that's the leading factor in the consistency and the sort of relentlessness that I have across the areas that I say that I care about. I just don't want to fall short of who I say I am, because if there was a delta between the vision and the identity that I hold myself to and the actions that I take, then that's actually quite a painful place. And yes, there's no doubt about it, I'll make mistakes. I'll maybe not quite hit that peak that I aim at every single time, but I will repeatedly show up as often as possible as my best self. And that's an untold hidden driver, if you want to use that term. And if I'm giving a recommendation to you listening to this, the biggest thing that I can recommend is, when it comes to propelling yourself forward, is always try and live up to the highest version of yourself, no matter how you feel. At the moment, I'm super stretched out here in Dubai. I'm having a fantastic time from a work perspective, but I'm also socializing a lot as well. I'm out late, I'm sleeping a little bit less, I'm still training, I am very stretched. It's fantastic, but guess what? I'm still showing up, I'm still delivering this podcast to you, I'm still creating as much content as possible and really trying to deliver the best possible value to the people that choose to support me. And that is doing those things and following through in the plans that you set when you were at that most hyped up, most aspirational, most dialed in version of yourself. When that feeling of being like in the zone fades, you still need to show up as if you're in the zone. You can't slow down just because you don't feel like it. Question number six, and very relevant given where I'm sitting just now. We want an update on the Dubai split life living. I saw your company are selling there now. So does that lead to chances of you going too? I'm out here recording just now during a 10-day stint, and it's unlikely that I'll be back here before probably November time, because I think the summer will be really, really hot. And I even think if I was partly located between Dubai and the UK, I wouldn't actually be that buzzing to spend the summer in the Dubai heat. I think something like a split between late October till March in the sun in Dubai would be amazing. And then April onwards would be Europe and at home. But I will stress that all of this is completely academic at this stage. And you rightly point out that my employer is now supplying furniture into the Dubai real estate sector. And I think that'll do really, really well. And we have one sales guy out here that's been running that for a little while and seen some progress. And we'll see how he gets on over the longer term. I think my skill set would absolutely thrive out here, no doubt about it, but it would mean moving sector. I primarily have a greater understanding, relationship, and I have a really good core set of skills in the niche of student accommodation when it comes to supplying furniture into that. And I think that in sales, you really need to understand your customer base, speak their language, know what problems you can solve. And that's paid dividends for me over time. And there's still so much headroom for me to grow into in terms of from a fiscal and a sales perspective at home, that I'm not in a rush to do that. I think if you were to see me living a split life, it would be as an entrepreneur and not as somebody that's in employment. I don't think I see myself moving out to Dubai to work for someone. Question number seven, do you have any favorite movie quotes? I really struggled to think of one for this, but I think the most frequent that I use, particularly in a work perspective, is Wolf of Wall Street. And it's when Leonardo DiCaprio is doing his famous pick up the phone and start dialing speech. And it's that phrase, pick up the phone and start dialing. Anytime anyone moans to me about their sales numbers, their pipeline, their commission, anything that really matters to them fiscally, I'm always like, well, pick up the phone and start dialing, because that is ultimately what's going to move you in the right direction. And I think you can apply that to any area in life. Somebody moans to you about not losing weight, well, pick up the phone and start dialing would be the equivalent of go to the gym and start tracking your nutrition. Like, do the thing that you know you need to do that feels a little bit difficult. You should probably do more of that. Question number eight, and the only football question today, I think, is are Rangers winning the treble? Well, we're out of Europe now, so the quadruple's off. We've won the League Cup, and we currently sit top of the league, but the squad is incredibly stretched. And in terms of treble, we are also in the semi-final with Hearts still to play in the Scottish Cup. I think it would be a minor miracle if Rangers win the treble. I don't think there's much between Celtic and Rangers this season whatsoever. I think the main difference since October time has been Phil Clement, who has really maximised what he can get out of what I think is a pretty average to poor Rangers squad with four or five good players and a lot of very much mid-range players that you wouldn't expect to be dead certs to win a title. So I think it's going to be very, very close. I think the manager will drag Rangers to the league. If that meant we didn't win the Scottish Cup, then I would accept that. If we win both, then absolutely amazing. Question number nine, what's the current training split? I am lifting weights 5 days a week, push-pull legs, upper, lower, so that's five weight sessions, and I am boxing once a week, occasionally twice a week as well. When I throw in that second boxing session, it's really hard for my shoulders and my triceps to some extent, my upper mid-back to recover, so that becomes a bit of a struggle. So that's roughly how training looks, and alongside that, I am walking at least 10 to 12,000 steps per day. I think that's largely what my training split is going to look like for foreseeable. I think there's always a temptation for me to do more boxing because I want to become more physically capable of using that, and I've definitely seen improvements, but I also still remain very attached to the muscular physique that I've got, and I think I've actually made some reasonable improvements even recently, which was interesting to see again, but still broadly within the same ballpark. Question number 10. As a pretty new podcaster myself, your upload frequency is amazing. Has there been any moments where you've not wanted to do a podcast 1 week, but just pushed through anyway? I'm not sure that I want to do a podcast. There's not been a week where I've been like, oh, I don't want to record. But there's been weeks where I've been stretched and some periods where there's been a guest cancellation or they've rescheduled. And that's really when you need to try and be ahead of the game in terms of building up that backlog so that you've got a contingency plan in place when things go wrong. So having those strong systems, those strong processes when it comes to guest management, when it comes to outreach, and when it comes to scheduling in. And that's something that I've taught at length during the podcast masterclass. So if you're a new podcaster or you're somebody that's got aspirations for that, then it's definitely something I can help if you want to check out the course. I will say, I reflect on a period where it was really hard between around episode 90 to around episode 100. I had quite a lot of rejection from potential guests during that time. I think that's probably been the hardest period for scheduling and guests. I don't know what it was, just timing. A process of timing and maybe just the amount of outreach that I was finding time for. And I did question at that stage if I was building the show at the right pace, because when you're getting rejection from potential guests, a lot of it comes down to your show not being big enough or you not being attractive enough an offer in terms of how you set things up. And I remember there was a few times during that period where I was scrambling a little bit and I was maybe recording something on the Friday night with a guest or the Friday afternoon or the Saturday to make sure there was something ready to go out on the Sunday as my minimum weekly upload. And that was really, truly tough. I can't think of any in particular that were challenging, but it was very much a case of making do, pushing forward, getting another rep in, even on the day that you didn't, maybe, I don't want to say not feel like it, but it wasn't the ideal scenario or situation that you were in, but you just did it anyway. So as a podcast, you need to do the reps and you can extrapolate that out into whatever area of life that you're aspirational in right now. Ah, crypto question, of course there is. Number 11, when are we all taking profit on Borg? So Borg is the native token for Swissborg, the exchange and wealth management app that I use for my crypto. And the Borg token has been on a little bit of a run at the time of recording. I think it's somewhere around 32 cents and it was down as low as 11 cents during this during the bear market. But worth noting, it's been as high before as $1.50. So pretty exciting if it goes anywhere near that again. And I would strongly consider taking profit on the way up when it gets anywhere near its previous all-time high. But I think that we can be excited about the potential for it to go between $2 and $3. I know there's people out there with much more bullish predictions on Swissborg, but I don't know if there's the market cap and liquidity in it to drive it to that without a lot of it being sold off along the way. So again, not financial advice, I will be taking some of the profit on my Swissborg because I've been buying in at the lows. Anywhere where it goes over about $1.40, I will be starting to average out a little bit, while of course still leaving in the stake to ride it out all the way to the top, hopefully. Question number 12, do you prefer to surround yourself with people of the same mindset and similar opinions, or do you like to engage with people not aligned with your beliefs? I think that's that whole echo chamber side of things, isn't it? Because if you're surrounded by people who all share the same beliefs, then of course you kind of all start to parrot that. But at the same time, when I was talking earlier about the three non-negotiables for my circle, I really believe it's important that you have people that are aligned with who you are and what you stand for. So it's a really good thing to consider. I would say on the whole, the most people in my circle have a similar mindset, but our opinions on some matters can differ. And I'm not a dictator or a tyrant, so I do have some friends who don't agree on all matters with me. And it's really healthy to have different perspectives on some ideas that people can push back on and question. And I don't want yes men in my corner who wouldn't call me out if they disagree with me or wouldn't even just be brave enough to provide a fresh perspective, as we all have different life experience and different knowledge in different areas, which shapes how we view things and how we see things. So it's great to have people like that within your circle that probe and challenge and push back and have reasonable stances that make you question yours. But there's certain matters that I genuinely will not countenance any debate or disagreement on. If I think something is immoral or disgraceful or vile, or if a view extrapolates, if like one view that somebody holds extrapolates out to other characteristics and values, then I'm probably going to be like, nah, you're not somebody I'm going to be surrounded with. But I've definitely got two or three friends that I actively don't see eye to eye with on all political matters and some in particular. But we share the same mindset in other areas, or we have values that we agree on some of the really big things. So yes, I have some people in my circle that don't have the exact same opinions, but they have broadly a similar mindset. I do like to engage with people who don't hold my beliefs, but not to the extent that it drains my energy or makes me angry or triggered or just genuinely not function at a very good level. I think if I look at my online consumption as well, there's a number of pages or alternative viewpoints that I take in on there. But I'm also not someone that's willing to invest lots and lots of time in educating my stuff that I don't care about too much. And if it allows me to push back a little bit on where my stance is to understand somebody else's perspective, that's healthy. But I can also spot when somebody's sharing these things from a well-intentioned place, because it's much easier to understand if somebody's got a radically different viewpoint to you and they put it across in a well-intentioned manner. Even if they come from a different side of the argument, you can respect it. But we all know there's people out there that are good actors and bad actors, and you don't want to be involved with them. Question number 13, three must-dos for young men in their 20s. This is an interesting one. And sometimes I think back to like how many podcasts I consume, and I think about the kind of things that I would have wanted to hear. So I would say first things first, get in shape and build an exercise habit. As a young man in your 20s, this is foundational. Young men in modern society are not in a great spot right now. Typically, you're going to be behind the curve when it comes to educational achievement. You're going to be lacking in validation and encouragement from the mainstream media. And you're even going to be lacking in some of the same levels of purpose that previous generations had in terms of perhaps major events that were shaping society and culture at that point in time. But one thing that you can control and start to gain mastery of is your body and the downstream effects that you get from gaining competence in this vital area. I really always say this, and I'm probably going to say this throughout this podcast. It's the gateway drug to self-development. It's the gateway drug to pursuing a better version of yourself in other areas. Get in shape, build an exercise habit, become physically capable and physically aesthetically pleasing, and it will help with so many other areas of your life, confidence, mindset, everything like that. Secondly, learn how to communicate well. It's going to serve you well across multiple domains. If you can communicate and get your ideas across in business, in your career, in your relationships, this is going to be invaluable. It's a priority to get this right. I want people to be able to understand where you come from, what your ideas are, what you stand for, why you feel the way you feel, why you think they should move in your direction and follow you and support you and understand your needs and work alongside you. These are fundamental traits that will serve you really, really well. If you're in shape and you can articulate yourself well and get people to come along with you, you're going to be a fantastic and in a fantastic place during your 20s. Third, and definitely not last, be selective of what you consume. You are very moldable during your 20s. I still believe I was very much a child until I was 21. I was at university until I was 21, and I wasn't exposed to the real world. I hadn't worked full time. So I think that really opened your eyes up to what the world is really like. So during this time, when you're so moldable, be selective of what you put into your eyes and your ears. Your phone can fill your head with TikTok and explicit material. It can fill it with distractions that take you off course, or you can consume insights from the best minds in the world. You can get advice from experts in any field that you're interested in, and you can plug into this, get hours of free support, identify what you want to become and what you want to work towards, what area you would like to be an expert in, and then consume that content for free, but also then pick out paid resources and online mentorship and education that you can really excel within and reach the next level. Adam Rossi said this in a recent episode when we spoke to him, and he said, we are in a golden age of technology and access for young people, but you're also flooded with options. So choose wisely. Don't get lost. Don't be wasting your time online. Question number 14, what's your least proud moment and what was the lesson that you learned from it? I struggled to think of something where I was really like ashamed of. Like, touch wood, I haven't done anything in my life that is absolutely heinous that I look back on in horror. But on a short-term basis, I think I'm the least proud on like a day-to-day or weekly basis when I maybe fall short of the standards I set for my health or my work or my communication or how I show up and I support the people in my life that I care about. And those are the days where you don't feel proud. You don't feel like you were as close to the version of yourself that you want to be. But if I go a little bit deeper than that, I think most people can probably relate to this too. And if you're listening to this right now and nodding along, I am probably least proud when I engage in idle gossip or I'm degrading about someone, especially someone I don't really know, because you often don't have the full picture of the information to hand to actually pass a fair comment and an assessment. And even if it's not, even if you have all the information and you know somebody's a bit of a prick or a twat and you're not really a big fan of them, it's really easy to talk down on someone. And there's definitely times I've done it and I've felt completely validated to do it, whether that's been in a group chat with people and I've laughed at somebody else's expense or their perceived stupidity. I do think there's times that feels quite fun and it's justified, and I've no doubt that it'll probably happen again at some point. But I don't want to make a habit of giving people a hard time behind their back and laughing at their expense. I don't think that's a healthy thing to do. And it's not the positive driver that I typically like to have in my day-to-day life. And I think the story we tell ourselves about whether it's fair or not to be demeaning about somebody, it really matters. Like, putting negativity out into the world can only serve to create more negativity. And I think the lesson from like feeling not particularly proud of it when you behave like that is applying that negative energy and casting aspersions on somebody is something to limit as much as possible. Question 15, what are the big daunting projects of Cambro Conversations? I'm far from daunted. I really, really feel ready to keep pushing to the next level. And I know I mentioned earlier about how I need to create a more visually appealing home setup for my remote recorded sessions. And I've sought some great advice in this space, and I'm happy to invest in the equipment that's required to make those upgrades. And anything that's heavily focused on the tech side, that's a tiny bit daunting for me, because I'm not a massive expert in that space. I know how to produce a good quality show, and I know how somebody can do that themselves. But it's not an area of passion I get excited about in comparison to my hunger for improving my question quality, improving my conversations, improving my reach, my impact. Those get me buzzing, and I'm like, you can hear my voice. I love those things. But if somebody's like, oh yeah, I want to change to this camera and have the light set up in this particular way, and or have your laptop angled in this way, I'm kind of like, okay, cool. But only because it unlocks more of those other areas. I guess outside of that as well, I just really need to keep nailing my outreach and searching for quality guests, preparing hard, asking good questions, probing deeper, sharing insights to improve the conversation as well, because you can just ask as a host, but you also need to bring insights to the table as well. And then beyond that, making sure that I'm promoting the episode and helping the guest with the best possible assets to reach their audience too. And from there, it's just rinse and repeating that over and over again with just incremental increases in quality over time. That's the game plan. And that's the projects of Cambro Conversations, but it's not the daunting ones. Number 16, and I'll take a drink before this one because it's a bit deep. Okay, number 16. What is the basic essence of happiness, and are you happy, Colin? I've heard someone say recently that happiness is when you meet the standards in life that you expect for yourself. So that's your expectations and your outcomes closely aligned. And I think that seems like a good framework. And alongside that, I would say that as long as the happiness that you feel is in line with the values that you set, because I think values and expectations slightly differ, and your values and your principles that you set out in advance, when you're living the highest version of yourself and you have good expectations for yourself and good values in place and good outcomes off the back of that, then I think it makes sense to feel happy. Because when you were feeling your most aspirational and your most keen to see yourself do well, when you live close to that, that's real happiness. Whereas I suppose if you were like just happy to be getting by and just above water and you were meeting those expectations, it's probably not the same level of happiness. That's probably more relief that you're just about making it. And in terms of the second part of that question, yeah, I am really happy. And I've said before, I've got quite a good set point and a base level when it comes to getting stimulus and feeling good from the little things in life. So going a walk in the morning with a podcast that I enjoy, training and lifting weights, seeing friends, going to watch Rangers, playing golf with my friends. I feel great when I'm doing these things. And I don't think I'm asking for lots when I'm asking for those things. I don't think they're like absolutely flash or extravagant. And you maybe laugh given the location I'm in. When I'm out here in Dubai for this period, I'm definitely doing some things like going to fancy restaurants and beach clubs and brunches. But I also, like most days, I'm going for steak and eggs at Expectation at a little cafe. And those 30 minutes, I'm enjoying every bit as much as some of the other activities I'm doing out here. So making sure that my happiness is correlated with the activities that I'm doing, and not making myself be too demanding of doing something crazy just to feel happy. So I think if you were to summarize that, I am meeting the standards of my life that I set for myself largely, like to close to a full extent, while also expecting more for myself as I grow and I progress, and I'm working towards different levels of improvement in different areas. And that's always something that's shifting. So the areas that I care about right now, they've largely been consistent for 3-4 years now, but they do shift every so often in little directions, and just making sure that I'm staying on top of that and taking stock of what matters at what time and where my expectations lie in different areas. Question number 17, if you could go back in time and do one episode differently, would you? No, probably not. I'm very comfortable having guests on for a second time if I feel like we could have another conversation and explore other things that maybe I didn't get managed to get into last time, or maybe have changed since we last recorded. And there's undoubtedly episodes that I would listen back to now and think I could have been sharper, I could have asked the guests better questions, or even maybe the guest wasn't at their peak and maybe they've gone on to be even more interesting than they were when we first spoke. But it's a long form conversation, completely unedited, and it ebbs and flows, goes back and forth, and we produce what comes to pass through that conversation. And thinking that I would want to redo it in its entirety, I think that would be pretty insincere, and it would be an ill reflection on what I think podcasting should be. And while I prepare well for my podcast, I research, I have suggested topics and some planned ideas that I want to cover, but there's never any rigidity or controlling agenda to my pods, so I can't have a complete expectation of where it's going to go from the very, very start. So I shouldn't have a complete expectation on what the outcome should be. So I shouldn't go back and try and rewrite it or redo it. Question number 18, what's been your toughest business challenge so far this year? In my sales career, we are growing really, really fast. Multiple 3 figures growth in the first year. Pretty much the same again in the second year. And then about 57% last year, which given how much we've grown since 2021 is pretty astounding. And through my prospecting and outreach, I've generated some new tender and quote opportunities for some of the biggest and the most sought after contracts in my space. And this has stretched capacity, not just for myself, but for the internal teams that work within my company to actually handle and put forward our bids for these tenders. And I've really had to work hard to get the buy-in of the teams internally to actually come in the direction I want to take things at the pace that I want to take things. And I spoke about this self-awareness side of things when I last spoke to Richard Dixon on the podcast. And I was talking about, as an enthusiastic, high-energy sales guy that wants to grow and do big numbers, you cannot bring the same energy to every conversation. There's going to be times that you need to be more low-key. You need to be more mellow. You need to be slower. You maybe need to be more data-led rather than emotionally led. And I've had to get this right over the last few months. And it's not been perfect, far from it. And I'm so excited about what I've managed to open up through my prospecting on the phone, my emails, my LinkedIn. But you also need to make sure that people help you fulfill that, because in any company or any role or any business that's listened to this, very few people are a one-man band that do absolutely everything from the start all the way through to fulfillment. And that's been my biggest challenge, to get everyone to pull in the right direction with the speed, but also the skill and level of expertise that I've brought to the table to start with, because you want somebody's experience dealing with you to be consistent throughout. So from the very first contact, they're like, wow, this guy's excellent. And they want that to be all the way through. Pardon me. In Cambro world, in terms of biggest business challenges, it's been time. And that's been the time to build out the sales training modules that I want to for you guys. So guys that are listening to this that either work in sales, or you want to improve your sales ability within your own business, or how you communicate your offer. I know that I want to deliver something really high quality in that space. What I built for the podcast masterclass was of such a high quality in terms of the videos, the scripting, the documents, the insights. I would do the same for sales training. And putting something out there that wasn't of that level was not acceptable. So finding the time to not just grow the podcast the way it's going in terms of the charts in the world, the standard guests that we're getting, the reach and the level of impact, that's been the priority. So building the training has been too much until now, and it's late March already. So I need to really find the time for that. So that's been the biggest challenge for this year. 19, and I'm not sure how deep to go on this, but we'll see where I end up. What did you want to be growing up? What made you go down the route that you did? Growing up as a kid, I wanted to be a sports journalist. So many listeners will know my grandpa, Willie Thornton, played for Glasgow Rangers, one of the top ever scorers in the Hall of Fame. But grandpa also was a sports journalist and he wrote articles and match reports. And I certainly realized quite young that I had no talent for football and I was not going to be playing as a striker for Rangers or as a rugby player for Scotland or whatever I turned my hand to, even my golf, I was not going to be a professional. So I wanted to be a sports journalist. And as that became a little bit more serious around 15, 16, I started writing match reports for the men's first team at my rugby club. I would go around the country writing those reports. They would get published in, pardon me, I'm going to need another drink. Thanks for bearing with me there. So I would write these match reports that were getting published in the local newspaper. They were getting published in the online space. And when I was going to these different rugby venues, I was asking some of the journalists that were also writing match reports, or I was asking some of the journalists that were writing match reports for the programs like Glasgow Warriors and Edinburgh Rugby, what do you recommend I do to get into this space? And a couple of them said to me that I shouldn't do a journalism degree. I should do a politics or a history or a philosophy, basically a degree that involved a lot of writing, but wasn't confined to journalism, because the journalist course, I think at Strathclyde at the time, was churning out journalists 10 a penny, but you were only qualified to do that. So it's quite funny, I was encouraged to go and do a degree which qualifies you for nothing directly, because vocational degrees are perhaps more employment related, whereas a politics degree that I ended up doing was very much focused on being academic and able to write well and take vast amounts of information and distill it down into an argument or an insight or a report, which is really useful when it comes to journalism, but it doesn't necessarily qualify you for that. But quickly, as I took time to go through university, I think in my third or fourth week at Glasgow Uni, this was 2010, the Glasgow Herald, which is the kind of the biggest newspaper locally, made something like 60 to 70% of its staff redundant, and it started just using freelancers. And that was a sign to come and a trend across the newspaper sector for many years to come. And nowadays, I know very few people that probably listen to this podcast that regularly buy a newspaper. You probably get most of your news online, either on social media for free or with a very small subscription. So it wasn't an industry that was going to boom. And I think the modern day journalist, if you look at what I'm doing right now, is a podcaster rather than what's happening. And if you look at what the rise in independent media, the guys like Zuby, who I've just spoken to, Chris Williamson, are getting on to shows like Piers Morgan. They're going on GB News and they're having these conversations because they've shown how talented they are compared to those bog standard shitty journalists that are in the mainstream media, who are mostly pretty incompetent or uninterested and uninspiring. Whereas the guys in independent media who built themselves and really have a skill set are doing so much better. So that's why I ended up in that path. I was somebody that wanted to be a journalist, was always interested in it, ended up going to do a politics degree. During my time at university, I started working in sales each summer for Ensley Insurance, selling contents and gadget and possessions insurance to students. Loved that, and ended up going into the sales world full time when I left university for that company, and just kept going down that route when it came to sales and conversations. And I think that's what really led to me being on the route that I did from a career perspective. I fell into sales, loved it, had an aptitude for it, enjoyed doing it, but also enjoyed studying how to get better at it and practicing how to get better at it. So that was really the place that ended up. But it is funny when I reflect on my time at kind of wanting to be a journalist. If you look at what I'm doing now, I really think that I am being journalistic when I ask questions of interesting people. So it is funny how these things come back around. Okay, here we go. Conspiracies galore. Number 20. What is the Cambro take on what is going on with the Kate Middleton saga? This question was asked just after the Photoshop photo was put out and withdrawn. And since then, at the time of recording, we've seen a video of Kate talking about having cancer. So that has been a bit of a turn in the story, and the narrative has probably changed a little bit since this question was asked. And I'm going to be completely honest. I don't know what to think. I have long been an admirer of the monarchy and I really like the Queen, but I'm pretty concerned with the direction that that family is going in terms of their values and also some of the political stances that they're coming out and making, and I don't believe that they should be making. And fundamentally, when it comes to the system in the UK and in countries that I think have a successful democracy, having a monarch is actually a really important check and balance to function properly. Otherwise, you end up with an all-controlling, all-seeing, all-doing presidential type role. And I don't think that's the best structure for democracy, because I'm not a Republican in any shape or form. In fact, I think having a monarch sit above the elected prime minister is favorable. Even if they don't intervene often or at all, you're going to be thankful over a 100-year period. If you look at how the UK has functioned versus most other countries, you're going to be thankful that there's a monarch there to keep a check and a balance on Parliament and on the quote-unquote elected figures. It's important to have that. However, the lies and the misleading content that's been put out, particularly around Kate Middleton's situation, it means we have no trust. You cannot explain away a photoshopped image, which was done so poorly with, oh, we didn't want to tell the nation that Kate had cancer. That's gaslighting, to be told that you shouldn't be critical of such bizarre and manipulative behavior that was shared within the mainstream media, and then it took independent media to call out and be like, what the hell is going on here, is completely a continuation of the breaking the trust, particularly since 2020, when largely we were lied to a massive extent. I think when you look at what's happening with Kate Middleton, it's very hard to take too much of it to at face value, and I'm just not going to get too involved or too upset or too bought into any of it. One thing I will say, and I say this from the best possible place because my own family have been affected by cancer, in particular breast cancer in my family, I hope everyone involved in this remains safe and healthy long term, as there's many ways that the situation could play out horribly. And if you hark back to the Princess Diana situation, it's an easy parallel to draw. And I'll just say that with my critical thinking hat on, and maybe slightly conspiratorial, be extremely skeptical about anything you hear or read about the treatments that Kate and probably King Charles may or may not undergo during this period. I'm going to leave it at that at this stage because that's as informed as I am on the topic. Question 21. What is the biggest distractor of your energy and time? In terms of time, it's got to be social media, doesn't it? Using it as a distraction tool when I'm mid-task, that's what takes you out of flow. That's what takes you out of the process of really doing the thing that you said you were going to do. And there's some environment design things that I do around that. I've learned a lot from Nia Rial when he was on the podcast talking about indistractable and time boxing. But sometimes you do just click off the task that you're doing when it's uncomfortable, when it gets hard, or if you just lose some focus and you feel a little bit bored and a need for a new stimulus. Social media is always going to give you that if you refresh your feed or you go and reply to your messages. And I would say this is actually more of a time drain than an energy drain, because if I switch out of my task to read DMs and talk to listeners, it's actually an energy boost. I feel great after it, but it's not always the thing that I committed to do. So therefore, it's a little bit of a distractor. If I answer from an energy perspective, the biggest distractor, if I were to change distractor to detractor from energy, is when I don't follow my sleep routine, when I don't have good sleep hygiene, when I don't have good sleep boundaries. That is what stops me getting good quality rest. And when those slide, I don't function at the same level. I think I'm feeling pretty sharp, pretty energetic on this podcast. I think I interviewed the other day two people really, really well. But I'm definitely not functioning at my 10 out of 10 optimum because my sleep out here hasn't been great at all. Question 22, what are the signs of a strong versus weak man? First things first, a strong man knows and has direction of what he wants from life and which goals he desires to accomplish, whereas a weak man has very little clue or hasn't been willing to spend the time to really think about what he wants and decide upon it. He's normally directionless. He can blow like a flimsy tree in the wind and be blown from one thing to the next, just going with the flow, being really easily swayed either by his circumstances, timing, allowing his plans and activities to be shaped or suggested or changed to whatever seems glamorous or exciting at a moment in time is a real sign of weakness. And I'd say in contrast, a strong man sticks to his convictions, refuses distraction and deviation from the plan, often to the point of being disagreeable and pushing back when suggested otherwise. And that might even sometimes make a strong man hard to spend time with, because if it doesn't work for him and for his goals, then he should be saying no. And it might be difficult to even get time in the diary. Actually, Joe, I said earlier about some of my catch-ups require my friends to be interested in health and fitness, because that's how you're going to fit in. I'm being strong at that point in time because that's what matters to me. And if you want to see me, we should probably do that. Beyond that, when it comes to strong and weak men cannot handle or deal with difficult situations. They fold under pressure and they don't stand up and do the things they had to do. And that really links to often being insecure or having a lack of real self-confidence, because true self-confidence comes when you are who you say you are and you don't just have like bluster or bravado. And as a result of refusing hard situations and challenges, you become used to opting for the easier option when it becomes available. And those are habits that are really, really hard to break. So logic dictates that in the opposite direction, whenever something arises, instead of easing out of the challenge, sit in, embrace it, do the work, get the experience, build the calluses in your hands, and go forward. Take on the things that daunt you, build a tolerance for the difficult, whether that's the days that you don't want to go out and train and you just do it, when it's maybe pouring wet outside and you still go for your walk or you still go for your run, when you maybe take the time to read that heavy, laborious report and really understand that information before you write your proposal or write your email, or you decide to do the research on a topic so that you really, really bring your best self, whereas it maybe be easier to just read a summary or a review and spend time doing something that was less taxing or less pressure on you. When you do those things, you start to add up a level of mastery and confidence in yourself as a strong man that shows up when he said he would. And I think strong men are, in general, more focused, more resilient. They embrace challenge. They thrive under pressure. And they're always working on improving and getting better. Question 23. Are you looking to invest in property or are you happy with stocks and crypto? I actually ran some figures this week and I'm around 14% up in my stocks and shares since investing since around 2018. And that's actually heavily been carried by the S&P 500 and one pretty good equities fund that I've been invested in. But it's also weighed down by a couple of individual stock picks that I made in 2020 and some bonds that I held in a very conservative fund, which was slightly more heavily set towards bonds than it was towards equities. And that's weighed down that percentage, which is 14% up overall. Before we talk about property, I have started investing in whiskey in January, and that's something that I'm going to be continuing to do. I've got two whiskey investments so far. The first of those was a fixed return of 15%, and this next one is 20%. So really, really favorable and really strong. Like both of those are more than my stocks and shares portfolio is, and they're guaranteed returns as well, which is really, really, really healthy. And the last time I spoke about this in a solo pod, I had a lot of questions about it, and I can share more information over DAM and I can provide introductions to the relevant people. So if you are looking to diversify into the whiskey space, I've got great contact there that you can speak to. With my crypto profits, of which they are now looking much more exciting. In fact, Bitcoin was 150% up the last time I checked on my Swissborg app. I think I like the opportunity to have something as a harder asset, and that would be a buy-to-let property to go alongside the property that I live in. I've also would like to underline I have opportunities to work with property investors without me actually handling the property. So in a similar way to the whiskey, you could have guaranteed returns if you help fund the project on a fixed return basis, which is quote unquote personally guaranteed by the investor. But you also should understand that that wouldn't build me a portfolio, which is something that you're looking for. So you may be getting more cash back, but you wouldn't be building out a portfolio that might or should in theory pay you over time. So yeah, I am happy with my stocks and my crypto, but I'm also looking at whiskey in particular. I'm actively in there and I will consider property in the near to midterm future. Question 24, three things you love and three things you dislike about the fitness community. Community feels different to industry, which is probably an easier question to answer when it comes to this one, but let's go community-based because that's what you've asked. First thing that I like is there's so many avenues and options and domains for people to exercise and find a way that they enjoy exercising and be around people that enjoy that type of exercise. And I think we all know the positive impacts of finding something that you enjoy to do from exercise, and that ripple effect and that kind of pebble at the top of the avalanche, or the gateway drug to success and self-development, whatever we want to call it. That's great. Like, the variety is key. I love that that's available to us in this day and age. We've got a real abundance in that respect. Secondly, I really like the network you build. And I think that's key when you use the term community. There's a real network of people who, if you do the same type of exercise and go to the same style of training, there's a really good chance that you probably have some similar interests as well. And socially, you can connect with them. Lastly, and by no means least, the community and the type of people that you engage with in health and fitness are people who typically are able to hold each other accountable. It's very unlikely that the people who excel in the area that you're interested in when it comes to exercise and fitness are good at what they do unless they have some sort of self-accountability that will feed into how you behave and the standard that they hold you to as well. If they have an expectation for you to train with them and do well with them, then they should, by and large, be good people to be around from an aspirational, supportive, accountability perspective. Now, controversially, what do I dislike about the fitness community? The first and probably the biggest thing is how easily people get shiny object syndrome and bounce around modalities and methods. I mentioned one of the things that I like is the variety that we've got, but people who go from one thing to the next, and one minute they're a bodybuilder, next minute they're a hybrid athlete, next minute they're a high rocks athlete, next minute they're a runner. Focus on one or two things that you want to get really good at and stop bouncing around between the two, and stop just trying to market yourself as whatever's popular at that moment in time. And I don't just mean that in terms of marketing yourself. I mean in terms of like how you, as somebody that has a finite amount of time to allocate to these things, just goes between things. And I know there's a lot to be said for people who need that variety of stimulation to keep them interested, and that's great if you recognize that in yourself, but I think many people can get distracted. So in the fitness community, I think it's negative when I see people never really excel or try to excel in one area. Next up, I really dislike the lack of nuance that we have. One of the easiest ways to grow online and drive attention is to have absolute statements that are black and white on topics. It's much more popular to be a clear speaker who just says one or two things that are certainties, and people just have to take it at face value and have to just agree with you, or they're an enemy or they're an outgroup. And I'm thinking maybe guys like Eddie Abu, who just call anything that's not in line with his values like shit food or junk food, and this is killing you. And there's definitely gray areas when it comes to this stuff. I think many of us are opening our eyes to the fact that processed foods are not fantastic for us, and there's things that we need to do to improve our diet and our nutrition. But there is nuance in all of these topics, and there is data and also anecdotal experience that shows that we have to accept that there's gray areas. And I would encourage anyone that's creating content or trying to grow an audience to be clear and have forthright views, but also accept that sometimes there's room for data and minutia and insight to really understand a little bit more about it. And last thing, and perhaps most controversial, that I don't like about the fitness community, and I don't think many people who really like care about the fitness community like this, is that creeping of the woke agenda into the fitness space. And whether that's been with biological males being allowed to compete with biological females and it be championed and cheered is wrong and sick in my mind. But also phrases like health at any size have crept into the space. And not only is that not true, it's actually dangerous to encourage that. And when we care more about people's feelings than their health and their longevity, then we as a fitness community are letting ourselves down. And sometimes hard truths need to be told. And the hard truth that a biological man should not be allowed to get into a swimming pool or a changing room with a biological female should not be controversial in any shape or form. But if the fitness community bows down to these types of views and these types of agendas, then we'll end up in a really, really sorry state and actually make things less comfortable for people than they should be in terms of health and safety. Question 25, does fame drive you? Do you fear it in pursuit of podcast growth? Fame or being known should come as a byproduct of producing content that reaches more people, but it should not be something that's optimized for. I would rather my podcast was known than I was known. I would rather somebody said, I loved episode, whatever it was, of Cambro Conversations than, oh my God, that's Colin Campbell, the podcaster. That doesn't mean as much to me, albeit I would prefer that they referred to me as the podcaster than the influencer or whatever other surface level, like shallow term that there could be. So does fame drive me? No. It's probably positive if I'm more recognized or larger online, because it means that there's more people listening to this and engaging in it and sharing it and getting out there to the world. So thank you for your about to do that off the back of this episode. But if you are driven purely by fame, I think you've got much better vehicles than a podcast to do it. And I spoke to Professor Keith Campbell on the podcast last year about narcissism. Keith was an amazing guest, a fellow Campbell, of course, but also had been on Joe Rogan. He'd been on Modern Wisdom. So he was a real genius. And when he was speaking about podcast hosts, he said he thinks there's probably a smaller percentage of them that are narcissistic, or at least grandiose narcissists, because there's much easier vehicles to be quote-unquote famous and powerful. I think you can have power with a podcast because of the influence it can have when somebody chooses to listen to you for an hour, 2 hours a week, sometimes more. That's fantastic. But you would, if eyeballs and like notoriety and being known was your number one aim, you should probably do something else. So no, it doesn't drive me, and I don't fear it at all. I think I welcome the opportunity to be known for what I do and what I contribute to the space. And I hope that that's largely positive. And I believe that's largely positive for the people that are listening to my kind of show. I mentioned on my Instagram story that I had a couple of technical difficulties recording this podcast, and question 28 was missed off the final recording. So as you finish up listening to this, I want to say a big thank you for your continued support of the podcast. I'll answer question 28 next time we record, which will be episode 249, which is a crazy figure as we rip and tear towards 250 podcasts in over 4 years of recording this. So thank you to you for your continued support. If you're enjoying the show, please do make sure you've left a 5-star rating. And take the time to copy and paste the link of one of your favorite episodes to 2 or 3 friends. We really do grow the podcast one recommendation at a time amongst other like-minded aspirational people. And I'll be back to speak to you all again very, very soon.